Don't Make an Ideology, a podcast about the 69th best show of the 21st century. I am one of your hosts, Ian, here as always with...
Ryan Swen, hello.
And today we are going to solve the crisis that has precipitated the war in Ukraine. We've talked a lot about doing special bonus episodes, like our Bloor Street episode, and now this is going to be 3 hours of us hashing out once and for all whether the Soviet Union was communist, the purpose and function of NATO, and also we're going to explain why the blockchain is to blame for all of this.
That's a oddly that works well with the episodes, or like it's like the specific sort of this specific thing that we're, or like the dynamic that's introduced in this episode. There's a couple of different dynamics, which is, you know, like it's both good and bad, I guess.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, like I think we talked about this a little bit before, but the show obviously ends up with like a reputation for, you know, being a show very much about and, you know, maybe propaganda for the war on terror. But yeah, as we've mentioned before, the bad guys here are just good old post-Soviet thugs, you know. and we get, like, not to get into it too much yet, but we do finally get like a real sort of explanation and unfolding of mm-hmm. like the background that connects Jack and David Palmer. These episodes are chock full of information, but I actually mm-hmm. think they handle like the expository elements pretty well generally.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, it really helps when you have Kiefer Sutherland, Dennis Haysbert just going at it in an interrogation room. Like, it just works when you have those two actors and this sort of like gravitas that you've built up for each of them in a really interesting way. Of course, it sort of leads into like, I think that this is obviously, like, you know, there's all these political questions going on beforehand and like these sort of underlying political motivations. But I feel like this is the first episode where it really gets into that, into like the sort of, if not the nitty gritty, then sort of the sort of like justifications that that like U.S. leaders sort of have for their particular actions. Like you have, it's sort of, you know, like you said, the sort of covert operations, like the sort of post-Soviet sort of incursions into foreign soil, that sort of like just the clandestine sort of extra legal nature of it all, like it really starts to come to the fore for the first time in this episode in terms of what Palmer's talking about and how I feel like it sort of works in a way with his naivete, because he has just sort of like this do what needs to be done sort of mentality when it comes to things that aren't related to like his own family.
Yeah, we really have like a take charge kind of David Palmer now. Mm-hmm. Like now that this, he's got a little bit of cynicism now, you know,
yeah,
because of the past, 14 episodes or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting to see. I also think it's really interesting, you know, he says that like the CIA told him about Drazen, and then, mm-hmm. And then of course we get to meet Bob Ellis, right?
Yes.
We get to meet Bob Ellis, who's NSA.
Yeah.
We also find out that like CTU is like a government agency with branches everywhere, because there's a CTU New Orleans. And so that made me think of like, okay, what if 24 would have been a show like turned into a show like CSI, right? Where we get like CTU New Orleans, CTU Kennebunkport, you know.
Okay, but now this makes me think that for the International 24 remix, they should have not been about like a Jack Bauer figure, but instead just about these other branches of CTU that are operating in foreign countries.
Oh, that would be, oh, that's so true.
I mean, to be fair, I don't know exactly how 24 Japan works, but I know for sure that 24 India is basically following the first two seasons. Mm-hmm. So I do wonder, like, that would be, I mean, you know, like there's also just like that sort of just the idea of having Americans just operating on in different countries and sort of how they have to navigate that. But yeah, that That would be actually really interesting. Yeah. But we do need to talk about just about Robert Ellis and just like the sort of just the sheer lunacy by which he's introduced and just like operates throughout. We have actually mentioned these are the hours from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m.
Oh, damn it. Yeah. I was supposed to do it. I blew it. I blew my
No, intro. It's fine. No. We usually introduce it partway through the intro anyways, but yeah, just this sort of immediate just cut to from Jack and Palmer in the CTU break room, and then you cut to this bar in New Orleans, and
yeah,
this like sort of like he looks sort of like the like Colin Farrell's Penguin, playing, just sweating profusely, playing dice with this random guy,
dampest man.
Yes, and he says like, if you could look into my eyes, like you wouldn't like what you saw or something like that.
And the only thing missing, my only note for them is that he should have had a cartoonish New Orleans accent.
Yeah,
I was a little disappointed in that.
On the Wiki 24 page, the way it's written now is Robert Ellis: if you could read what's in my eyes, you'd crawl under a rock and cry. Lenny: ha, laughter abates, becomes nervous. Just like this sort of juggling dynamic between like these two very well established people, and then just like this sort of guy just sweating, still like on his phone and his computer in this random bar in New Orleans.
Yeah, just like he's playing some kind of dice game at first, and then it's like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna do like super secret stuff while hanging out here,
yeah,
talking at like a normal volume on my phone.
It seems like he has like a good connection. Also, like he's just sending these files to print out half like across the country.
Well, you know, he works for the NSA. He's got advanced tech that he's working with. He's got at least 2010 internet speed. We, since you're talking about episode openings, we did get a little bit of ahead of ourselves. And episode 15 opens with what is, bar none, the steamiest scene of the show so far.
I mean, I think this is something that we'll get into a lot, just like through 24 in general. I think this could also speak to like the sort of problem with women that the show has, but like just like endless amounts of women who are like in sensitive positions, like being seduced by like this random guy, like
this random
guy that turns out to be an international terrorist. I feel like we get that a lot. I mean, we sort of got that already with Mandy, but like it's sort of, there's 24 for a network show is like, from at least from my memory, especially because it came out like I was watching at a formative time for myself, like the sex scenes are like surprisingly frequent and explicit, at least for network standards, I think, in general. And like, this is definitely another example of that.
Yeah, I mean, I do remember the show getting more provocative as it goes on. Mm-hmm. Like, generally speaking, the elements of the show introduced in season one, like each season it just gets ramped up and ramped up further, to like until it, like the disparate elements reach their like breaking point. But yeah, I was surprised, you know, that this is, except for like Mandy being on the beach or in the desert burning her clothes, this is like definitely, you know, the most sensual passage of the show so far.
I like how John Cassar like stages this moment where Elizabeth Nash gets out of bed and like he uses Alexis Drazen's head to cover her.
It reminded me of the that whole sequence reminded me of the Simpsons movie when Bart is skateboarding. like almost like a kind of visual wit there in a way that I don't think we've seen in the show yet.
Still, I feel like we're still building our Cassar building blocks, but I think that, I don't know, for there was this particular moment that was this sort of like when Jack and Alberta were when Jack was being interrogated by Alberta,
that like this that, weird like, handheld like whip pan.
Well, yeah, like there's, I mean, Hopkins uses these whip pans also, like in a more like clearly like a transitional thing, and here it's just like sort of weirdly frenetic, like especially like this one that just like walks up to the table. I don't know.
It was
why.
Like a wrestling match. That's how it was shot.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Yeah, it was fascinating. I noticed that too, because like I think you've pointed out, you know, Hopkins does use handheld stuff and some of these more he uses a shaky cam stuff a little bit, but I think Kassar is definitely more and it'll be interesting to see if this develops as he goes on, but a little more into like kind of a almost like a post-continuity type mm-hmm. thing with some of the camera movement and editing here. Mm-hmm. Although the Hopkins episode here, episode 16, does have like that really sort of great sequence, the raid on the house, building into the ridiculous car chase.
I mean, it's well handled, but also it's incredibly ridiculous.
Oh, it's stupid. We're in full stupid mode by the end of these episodes.
Yeah, I think I had sort of forgotten, maybe because we just haven't had much field action with people who are not Jack, but I forgot just like how frequently C2 agents are just the most incompetent people imaginable.
Oh, no one else here is. I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah. They have like what? They have like the two agents stationed outside, like a lawn mowing guy and like a guy working on the, like pretending to work on the telephone.
Yeah, they have
at least
three or four people outside, plus the two agents who are already there. Like the two agents who Jack specifically says are like, or Nina at least says, like Jack says when he's given the names, he's like, oh, good. And then yeah. Nina says, like that they've worked with Jack for many years or something like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then they get taken out by this guy with like a miniature spear gun.
Yeah. I don't, you know, I'm excited for future seasons because yeah. I feel like the Kim and Terry plot is really the thing that they just don't know what to do with.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So I actually really like the stuff between, at least the first part of the stuff between Terry and Nina. Like, I think yeah. that's some actually interesting like character work.
Yes.
And then it just sort of goes downhill.
Like, well, this. It's like they like resolve it and then they decide, oh wait, actually we need more tension there. Like yeah. make it happen yeah. again. They basically have the exact same interaction like the second time after like Terry has been like, okay, like I'm going to pull myself together. And then all of a sudden she's like a huge asshole. like, but none of that is as bad as just like the Kim needs to be a brat now switch that they love to turn on. It's like Kim just finds out that her mom is pregnant and she's like pissed that her mom didn't like
yeah
tell her that like, yeah your father and I are having sex. Like, what the hell, Kim?
And like the surprisingly detailed description of contraception.
Yeah, yeah. it reminded me a little bit of that moment with Jack and Rick, where it's like after school special.
Yeah,
it had shades of that uh-huh. for sure.
Yeah, it's sort of. I mean, like I liked that there was, like I think that Alicia Cuthbert actually played the moment where after Terry decides to call Jack the first time, like she just has this sort of like great sort of childlike mix of
yeah,
like of joy
yeah.
like that's really good, and just like the rest of this is just like really not working, especially because she has to bring Rick back into the framework.
Yeah, yeah.
Man.
And then I mean really getting ahead of ourselves here, but just as a testament to like how stupid this show is gonna get, like We are 16 episodes into a show that was on for 8 seasons plus a 9th sort of limited season.
Yes.
And we have already had both a plastic surgery plot and now an amnesia plot. I mean, this is a soap opera.
It is.
It's and I'm not necessarily mad about it. I actually think the show leaning into that stuff more is like, you know, embrace what you are.
Yeah. I mean, I actually also like with I don't know if I don't think it would necessarily work in a show like this, but like the sort of third-rate Bergman sort of thing, like with Terry's depression. And like yeah. I don't like Bergman, but like I could see it like sort of working just in a different context.
I don't like Bergman. You youngsters.
I mean, I there's still a lot I have to see, but you know, I do adore Persona, but otherwise. But anyways, I could see it just like this sort of weird stasis of depression, like a major depression that Terry falls into. I think it could work in different contexts. I do wish it wasn't so intrinsically tied to her meeting the person that Jack had a brief relationship with. Like, it felt like a bit sudden or extreme to work in this sort of context. Or, I mean, you know, I guess there's also the pregnancy and her being kidnapped, but I feel like it's more directly because of this this revelation.
Yeah, I mean, you get like a series of events, and I don't precisely remember the order. I think that the confrontation with Nina is the pregnancy test is first, then the confrontation with Nina, then she's shown the picture of the guard that assaulted her.
I feel like it was
right.
Oh, yeah, she is shown, but I feel like that might have been after.
Maybe that was after. But then, of course, they have this, again, a harrowing chase. And at the moment when she thinks, like, Kim is dead, right?
Yeah.
Now, Hopkins actually does a great move here, which is, like, the camera loses focus.
Yeah, that's good. It's sort of offset by the extraordinarily bad special effects.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know. What are you gonna do?
I mean, yeah, it's television, but still, sort of, yeah. Or like, you know, it's like network television in the first season, but still, it's like this very. I mean, just like, I mean, you know, just the staging of the thing in general is very silly. Just this car going over,
like the way that it like shows us the up close of the tire, like right on the edge, you know. And yeah, it's fantastic. A good reminder that as eminent, you know, film critic Richard Brody has recently said, sub-artistic medium. It's not it's not really its own art form, you know. So it can only do so much removed from the situation of true Kino.
Speaking about amnesia, it's just, and especially at this sort of winding road, like unfortunately, I will probably be making numerous Mulholland Drive comparisons again, like going like throughout these next however long episodes, however long they try to stretch this out, just like this woman just like stumbling around on a sort of hilly road after suffering a weird inexplicable car accident.
Yeah.
Of course, it makes sense that you would sort of faint upon thinking that your child has died, but she could have gone down at least a little bit, just like instead of just collapsing right there.
It's such a weird. Yeah, I just like, what in the world? Like, what are the writers doing? And then when we see Kim and she's like
halfway up
she's
the hill
like a
from
football
the car
field away from the car, and she has some bloody knuckles, and her hair looks like they blow dried it too much.
Yeah,
and then,
I mean, like,
and then
even
when she's crawling up, the car explodes again, right?
Maybe,
or is it just smoking?
I think it might just be smoking,
maybe,
but still,
it's
just like, you know, it's just. I mean, A, of course, cars do not explode when they go down small hills, but
no,
no, you have to have some sort of ignition. But it's just like this. I honestly can't tell. I wonder. I'm pretty sure it's like in the same line as the sort of Nina fake out where she gets shot and then like she gets up at the end of the episode, but still, like, there's like, it just like lingers on it for so long that I wonder if the writers were trying to goose us.
I am surprised they didn't at least hold off on showing Kim being alive.
I wonder if there, I would not be surprised if there was some sort of network mandate that you can't leave people in suspense like that. Like, have we had any, like, even with Janet, like, she woke up at the end of that episode, right? So, like, I wonder if there was, I don't think we've had any moment where a character has been sort of thought dead and then comes back.
Oh, because that's true of Nina too, right? Like,
yeah.
We see at the end of the episode that she's not. Yeah.
Right. I mean, this sort of goes into your IMDb sort of poll that for that usually the viewer is not allowed to draw their own conclusion.
Man, just a really salty post in IMDb trivia. I mean, you know, we've discussed the lack of moderation in that space. But, you know, I think shading into commentary more than trivia there. But I mean, you know, the point stands, which, you know, now that you're mentioning this, this isn't even something I'd thought of, is that, yeah, we don't really ever get left on, like, we're always left in a moment of tension, but never on like a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
Yeah,
I wonder if that'll change as it goes on, or if like, when does Lost start?
2004.
Okay, so I feel like maybe as we get into the middle seasons, maybe we'll see some more, because I do feel like you're right that maybe there's a certain kind of old school, kind of network view of like how you treat your viewers that will start to change as the show goes on because of like outside forces.
Yeah, there is a certain season finale coming up that does sort of go into that territory, but like within the season, I'm not sure. Like, yeah. I think that 24 like does love to retcon things, and I think that we'll get some very very nice examples. But yeah, I think for now, at least like within the seasons, I'm not sure. I think I wonder how it would have been like if they had tried to stretch out sort of Jack and Palmer being like at odds, if they had tried to stretch that out more instead of like having them sort of quickly reconcile. Like, it doesn't seem like it'd be in their nature to stretch out, so I'm like sort of glad that like things got clarified and they immediately start just like hunkering down in that break room together.
Yeah. Yeah, that scene with is so with Milo, I mean, it's pretty electric when they're who, by the way, we will now not see for 104 episodes.
Yeah. Like, his final shot is just like him handing like the like handing some files to Tony, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if it's I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but I sort of not realize that that 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. is the only time that we don't see Tony in the first three seasons. Or sorry, is it a no 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. like that's like maybe just because he gets such a good scene with Palmer, like at the beginning, like him sort of haggling with him, and then Palmer just calling up the Department of Defense and getting Chappelle to back down.
Yeah, I love that scene. I that's like such a great power move.
You just get like the sort of steely glint. Like that's something that, even though like the naivety aside, like Haysbert gets really well, that just like that sort of glare.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If we ever get around to sampling any of David Mamet's The Unit, I think we'll see a lot of that like steely eyed Haysbert in there as well.
I didn't realize. Oh, I guess he's the lead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a top secret unit modeled after Delta Force.
Yes. Yeah. So even further 24 connections.
Oh, yeah.
I also something I like too about the way that like Palmer kind of pulling rank there is we also get that great like parallel moment of Keith in is it the second episode?
Yeah,
here?
Second. Yeah.
We get that great moment of Keith like pulling a fast one on Carl, is a really unexpected and I think like a great, honestly, a great move for a character that I thought they would just kind of find a way to shuffle off the stage.
It's really cool. I mean, I like the sort of bonding moment that he and Palmer have initially. I don't like that it just like goes south in the exact same way as like the past 10 episodes.
Yeah.
It's sort of fun seeing just Nicole just pop up again.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she talks about a clicking sound on her phone.
Yeah, because she's like distracting the Secret Service.
Yeah.
Guy. Yeah, they like, I feel like it was like 8 episodes ago, they were like, yeah, she went to pick up her friends from the airport.
Yeah.
That LA traffic, though, it's a killer. So.
Yeah. Who's driving Keith, though? Like,
That's a great question.
Yeah, like it didn't look like a cab, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, because he sneaks out. Yeah, maybe he does take a cab.
Yeah,
maybe
I'm not sure.
Maybe they have like a, sorry, that's my cat.
That's okay.
Maybe they have, maybe they have some kind of like private driving service that that waits around that wouldn't necessarily know that they're locked down.
Right, right. But yeah, I do wonder if, I feel like this is actually the most, the Griffith Park Observatory, I wonder if that's the most noticeable thing, like the most noticeably LA thing that's been in there so far, you know, like a landmark.
Yeah.
Wondered if it was chosen because of its, if it's Rebel Without a Cause connection.
I of course thought of that. You know, you'd be the better judge of this, but for me as someone who's never been to LA, it definitely felt like the most LA location.
Yeah, I can't recall any other sort of distinct landmarks.
But I will say, not as romantic a locale in just like broad daylight.
No, it's not very. I mean, like they were sort of like on the side parts also. Like, yeah, I think that the main sort of the lawn in front and all that, like it's very nice looking. And just like the sort of side parts are just like more so you can actually see the rest of LA instead of the actual architecture.
I feel like the show didn't have the clout yet to like close down the whole observatory for the day.
I also liked how they were initially talking just in front of these Buddhist monks.
Yes, yeah. I almost wonder if it's like, are those even extras? Maybe it was just like, hey, we're going to go. Because you could, I mean, it would probably be a really small crew because you really only have two actors that need to be doing their thing. And it's like one scene, you know. So, maybe they didn't even, maybe they just waltzed in there, you know.
We need to have more like Safdie style guerrilla shooting for 24.
Yeah, when they bring it back, I feel like that's the next step.
The Safdie's directing 24.
Yeah.
They weren't attached to 40 hours for a while, so not too big of a leap.
Maybe not even directing 24, but just like getting Kiefer in a Safdie's movie.
Oh man.
like grizzled bearded Kiefer in a Safdie's movie.
Yeah, I think we're getting some good grizzled Kiefer coming up in media in general this year.
Yeah, we got that that Chris Pine movie he's in.
Yeah.
He looks ridiculous in that FDR thing, but I can't wait to watch all of the Kiefer scenes.
Kiefer in a wheelchair. The possibilities abound.
I wonder if he like got a new agent or something. I don't know, because it just feels like that's a role, like a kind of, you know, I don't want to sound crass, but like it's like a gimmick role, right? And he just doesn't seem like the go-to guy for that kind of stuff. Like his deal in the Chris Pine thing makes absolute sense to me. I was like, oh, that's like, that makes total sense that this is what he's doing now. But yeah, the FDR thing, I'm like, what in the world? Like, I don't know. Maybe he's, maybe he's trying to age gracefully and get in the period piece game.
I think so. I mean, you could argue that Designated Survivor is almost like a gimmick thing, but like just by virtue of it becoming like a multi-season thing, it sort of became its own thing. I mean, I haven't seen it admittedly, but still.
Well, and I think it still has a little bit of that like 24 aftertaste, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like from what I've seen of it, he's definitely not playing a Jack Bauer character, right? He's like the,
he's like the nebbish like environmental guy or something.
Yeah, he's like the head of the Department of Agriculture or something.
Housing and Urban Development.
Housing and Urban Development. Yeah, so he's like kind of like a pencil pusher, I think. But I think like the arc of the show is a little bit him sort of being able to develop the kind of steely resolve that you need to make the tough decisions.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Which it has a little bit of 24 to it, but I think definitely a different thing, although maybe like a similar audience.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we'll get into it. Certainly, we'll at least watch some. I also, in terms of LA stuff, I liked how Andre and Alexis Streisand were just meeting at this random restaurant.
Yeah,
and then also talking about like sensitive stuff.
That scene, and also when Kim and Terry got to the safe house, just made me think of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Like those are Curb Your Enthusiasm locations.
Like the pool in the backyard.
And just like, you know, just like the way the house looked in the front, and like even the way they were shooting them like walking up to the house.
I feel like there's too many windows for it to be an adequate safe house, but I mean, I guess, you know, you want to blend in, but still, like, I feel like it's very open.
I think I had less questions about that than the fact that once there was an assault on the safe house, there wasn't like a panic room. the one guy just like puts them in the bedroom with like a normal lock on the door.
Yeah, and they go out through the window. And I mean, I did like that bit of business, like that they took the initiative, but still, it's just, like, so open.
It just doesn't seem like a very safe safe mm-hmm. house. Like, it just seems like a normal house that CTU owns. But, you know, I suppose that it's like they're betting on like it being a secret location that looks so nondescript that you would like mm-hmm. never know. But I still feel like have a panic room or something, you know?
Yeah, like I do like the idea of CTU being in real estate.
Oh, they're all over it. Yeah. Think of all the houses they've got scattered around. LA, New Orleans, God knows yeah. where else. I also, two things from episode 15. You know, one is that Bob, gone too soon, but has just a great kill. You know, goes up to pee in the trough and then gets got. That was pretty great. And also,
I mean,
just,
it's
like,
good.
Jacking.
It's like, it just, I mean, like, I guess it makes sense because he's clearly like this NSA guy who's gone to seed, but still like this staggering lack of situational awareness. Like, even though he
particularly
has that gun.
When he was like all paranoid about like yeah. the guy walking through the door, and then he's like, oh, yeah, well, you know.
And it was that guy that actually killed him too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like this sort of, I couldn't tell if he was, if he had still been drinking or if he was just like extremely hammered at that point when he was just talking to Jack and
oh,
and
for
Palmer.
Sure. For
I mean,
sure.
Like,
he's been,
yeah.
He's been in that bar all day.
Yeah.
He's been there since they opened. And then we also, at the end of that episode, actually get like a really kind of cool composition from Kassar when mm-hmm. Terry is like sitting on the bed.
Yeah.
And the camera's like not quite level with her. It's a little higher. And then she just kind of like tips over because she's yeah. depressed. And it's just like very rarely, I think, so far have those like quiet moments in the show mm-hmm. worked. And that was the first one that I was like, oh, wow, actually, like this is like, this really works for what,
yeah,
for what they're
really
doing.
Good. Yeah. Like I said, like, I don't know if it would necessarily work, but I would have liked to see that sort of, like, keeping in that mode of Terry just being massively depressed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's certainly a mood. But yeah. then they tip into a spear gun home invasion. So.
Yeah, you know, I feel like they could have waited a couple episodes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I really hope that this, you know, like, I had sort of forgotten. I think that now that I saw that, you know, Terry amnesia, like I sort of remember that, oh, that is like one of the more major plot points for them for this second half of the season. But still, I have no clue how they're going to handle this, and I have a bad feeling about it. And also,
yeah.
Also, like, how long are we going to stick with Rick once again? I did like this sort of clandestine nature of him talking to her before, like, he goes back to his, before his girlfriend comes in.
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, what is she think he's been doing for the past 12 hours, and he has like this, like, I didn't know if she knew that he was shot or not.
I mean it's sort of hard to tell. It's like, on the one hand, he like his shirt is like covering it up, but I
yeah.
also like sort of get the feeling that like
he's just been puttering around his house.
Yeah. Like he's been there. How does she not know? Yeah, I don't know. It really feels like there's not, like, I think the show would have benefited enormously from kind of trying to lure the viewer into like a false sense of security with Terry mm-hmm. and Kim. And we just like, there's no point where I'm like, oh, they're good now. Like, because even the episode intros are still like, my wife and daughter are in danger or being targeted or whatever
yeah.
he says.
Well, he said both. Like, it's changed through
yeah.
the episodes.
So like even in the intro, it's like setting you up for like, okay, they're not out of the woods yet, like they're still in danger, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I also like how Kim specifically says that she cannot lie. I mean, it sort of makes sense for her character that she's incapable of lying, but still it's funny. Also, like how we finally get the return of this random soundtrack.
Yeah. yeah, I looked up what Rick was listening to, but now I don't remember what it was. It wasn't anything I recognized.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it would be funny to kind of put together like the random diegetic 24 playlist. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of weird. Although I think we get like really, I think for the first time, and maybe I'm totally wrong and I've just, you know, completely lost it and, mm-hmm. and blanked on something, but I feel like the once the car chase kicks off, we get like this like new metal kind of motif in the score.
Yeah,
that mirrors the kind of music that characters in the show have listened to so far.
I think so. I think that for some reason the Calories score has been coming more and more noticeable in a good way, I think, but yeah. Still, like, it's just sort of funny, like, how aggressive it is at times.
Yeah, because it does, like, you know, in the dialogue heavy scenes and stuff, it really does recede and sort of you don't notice it, which is, I think, maybe like a little bit about the trick of TV score music in particular. It's like you'd notice it if it wasn't there, but it you have to be good at it to do that, you know.
Yeah,
that was really really funny, especially because it happens like right after Nina gets back to CTU and looks at Jack and he's like all freaked out. She's like, no, I've settled them in. And then like immediately we get this cut to like dur, 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 dur. They're like flying around in this car.
Yeah, it's, man, Nina, I mean, like I've more and more certain like that they had no clue what they're going to do with Nina.
Nope, they don't know yet.
Yeah, it's just like this sort of, it's just like this, the, I, you know, it is like a soap opera in a way, like the, you know, they, you know, obviously like terms are imprecise, but still like just of having this like intense conversation about this very small period of time and like how Terry is like asking if Jack ever talked about her. And also we get another moment of where like Nina mentions like that he would talk about Kim while they're having lunch. Like
Jack doesn't eat. We've already noticed this.
Yeah. We do actually get a good moment of Palmer drinking whiskey again in his limo.
Yeah.
Like I do wonder if that's ever gonna become a thing, like where like he has like a mild alcohol problem or something like that. But because like that's at least twice now that we've seen him with like, no, not unjustifiably, but still, like,
yeah, he's had a rough day so far.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But yeah.
I wonder if it'll be kind of like when he's in the Oval Office, it'll be like a Jack Donaghy thing, you know? I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that happening.
Yeah, but I do just, like, even if Jack did eat, like, would he ever come down from his crow's nest?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I think that's like her trying to cover up because she realized she kind of blew it.
Uh-huh.
Like, cause I think like the thing, I think the way the, like the scene is conceived suggests that like Nina is also uncomfortable, she's trying to hide it, but she sort of slips up in like trying to console Terry about Kim. And then Terry is like very smart and immediately sniffs it out and probably kind of knew already.
Oh, sure.
Like probably had suspicions. The thing that annoys
Jack
me
does not seem like the guy to get on just like a random fling.
Yeah. The thing that sort of annoys me is that I feel like they've developed Terry as like a very emotionally mature character.
Yeah.
And this feels a little bit, you know, I think it's like one of the things the show can get away with is people are presented with such extreme circumstances that like, any kind of, you know, realism about like how people would act is kind of out the door. But it did feel a little bit like, I feel like Terry would be more sophisticated about all of this than she's being. And, you know, maybe she resents that, like, you know, Nina is the one there asking her all these questions and stuff.
Right.
But it's a, like you said before, it's a good scene. And then they kind of like undo all that goodwill by like resolving it and then doing it again. which is just such a classic move from them to be like, ah, oh, wait, shit, we need this. We got to move things forward.
Yeah. Just, I just like the idea of Nina just peacing out. Just like,
yeah.
I don't think she's even shown leaving. It's like, she says that Paulson will like take care of it. And then, like 20 minutes later, she just shows up at CTU.
Yeah. Oh, we have to mention we get George Mason back.
Yes, it's such a good reveal also because like Jack has changed once again. Like he gets this weird white shirt. Like it's weird to even in a white shirt, like white collared shirt for some reason. Like he's sort of freshened up in a way. I don't think he's shaved, but he's freshened up.
Weirdly. It's a lot more formal now.
Yeah, exactly. And then just like George Vincent just strides in.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good.
You also get this sort of like extremely good Mace in a moment where when they're talking to Nash, like he says, "Oh, so you met him at a bar." He's just so.
It's so good. I love him. I'm glad he's back.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a little annoying because now I'm sort of like, why was Alberta Green like even a character?
Yeah, and like,
I think in the end, they did her all right.
Yeah,
but it does. Once you are reminded that George Mason exists, it's sort of like, why wasn't he? Like, why do we need all these other kind of like mid-level bureaucrats that are just kind of disposable and move in and out? You know,
yeah,
I mean, maybe that's kind of what.
And the first episode, and this was the last time she's on the show.
Yeah, yeah, and like I think Ryan Chappelle will not be around much longer either.
Yeah, well, at least for this season.
For this
probably.
Season, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's.
It's just sort of weird because it's like we already got George Mason. And it sort of would make sense that he'd be the one, and I feel like you could have like the same things happening. Like I still feel like he'd be giving Tony a hard time and like. You know, no, like leaning on Nina for info and stuff like that. It's just a reminder that, you know, the show is still like juggling a lot of its like identity and what it wants to do.
It's just like sort of like I do like how immediately they get back into like sort of nice cooperative, but still like slightly combative dynamic.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I also like how you get him like, sort of reassuring Nash that she doesn't have to do it.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Like, he has, like, that's what Xander Berkeley does well. It's, like, this sort of, like, sort of, you know, like, slightly slimy thing, but he can also be compassionate when he needs to. Like, just, like, and it all feels integrated.
Well, and you see, like, why this guy has this job.
Yeah.
Like, when he wants to be charismatic, he can be enormously charismatic.
Yeah. Like, you most of the time, he's just, like, sort of tired. Like
yeah,
he's, or like fed up with stuff, but then you could turn it on.
Yeah, who can't relate to that? Maybe that's why I like George Mason so much.
Yeah.
Something I forgot to mention: we do get another moment where someone has to explain what CTU is.
Yeah, just on the phone with Sherry.
Yeah, Homer's just like, "I'm at CTU, a government agency." It's just like nobody knows what this place is. It's seemingly a public-facing agency. Like I don't think it's like it's not like off the books or anything. Like it's totally public-facing, even though their work, you know, is by its nature like sort of secretive. But like absolutely no one knows what it is.
Yeah.
Like I think that if you even like obviously CIA, FBI, you know, if you said, "Oh, that's where I work," people would know. But I think even if you said it this, like NSA, right? Like, I think people would have some idea of what that is. And in particular, if you're the wife of a senator who is running for president.
who's been involved with clandestine operations for like decades.
Has also, wait, it's gotta be, CTU has already had to be mentioned to Sherry at some point, right?
Yeah.
Like in this show, like not even talking about like, the logic of whether or not she'd have to have this explained to her. Like, I already feel like she's been in a room where they've talked about CTU.
That's probably true, yeah.
Like, she's had to be, right?
Like, didn't she, say that she was going to reveal that it was Jack who was responsible for the assassination, like, to Maureen Kingsley or something like that?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
This is such a weird line. This is even weirder now. I just noted it as, like, a funny thing at the time, but now it's even more whack.
Also, I think we forgot to mention last episode, like how like Maureen Kingsley just leaves, and she's like she's been like taken out by Carl.
Carl's a smooth operator.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, I think something I didn't really notice until his conversation with Keith, but like both him and both of them have like weirdly like sort of like prominent chins.
Yeah,
it's just like this sort of it's fun watching them sort of. Duke it out. It's just like they have these like very, you know, like this very like forward way of talking in a way that Palmer doesn't really have. Like he's more like recessive, I guess.
Yeah
I don't know, weird thing to note. But also on the props and minutia section for the second episode, on Jack's computer he has tabs to access databases from the CIA, FBI, and TLA, which stands for three-letter agency. And like, yeah, so yeah, I do wonder how long it took them to come up with CTU, the name specifically, you know, to have a good three letter name for an agency.
Yeah, I this is leading me to speculate on, like, when do you think CTU was created? Like, maybe it's a newer agency, like, in the world of the show, you know? Maybe it's gotta be...
Well, they said, like, after the first World Trade Center bombing, so...
Yeah, so it's not that old.
Yeah, it's not that old, but still, I feel like, I mean, maybe it was more forward-facing, but, like, Homeland Security, like, became very well-known, like, immediately after it was established.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, it's obviously, like, you know, a bigger thing. It has its own secretary and all that, but still, it's sort of... very immediately entered the public consciousness, whereas this is sort of like remained floating around.
Maybe we'll get like the most nightmarish 24 reboot I could possibly imagine, and we'll get a de-aged Kiefer Sutherland doing a mid-90s period piece about young rookie CTU agent Jack Bauer.
That would be one of the only, like, legitimate reboots that I'd be interested in watching.
Oh, I would watch the hell out of it.
I mean, we would, you know, even if they brought it back, like, 20 years in the future, I think we would definitely reconvene this, assuming that we aren't still going at that point.
Oh, yeah, definitely, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I really liked the moment where Jack and Palmer are commiserating about their relationship with their families.
Yeah.
It's just like this sort of, you know, like it's like touching, and like it's done well, but it's also like it's funny just them talking about like these very questionable like war practices or Cold War practices, like in the midst of talking about, and how it's sort of not really, it's kept them from being with their families.
Well, and it comes after, like, yeah, it comes after them almost having to reckon with the fact that they, like, did just kill this guy's family.
Yeah,
You know, they move on very quickly because
yeah,
they have to, but there is, like, a brief moment there of, like...
Yeah, like, Jack has that, like, that regret on his face, like, that he killed his, Drazen's, like, wife and daughter.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, like, there's this moment where, you know... they're allowed to understand a little bit, like, oh, this is why, mm-hmm. this is why things have happened this way, right? Like, these are consequences that maybe we don't necessarily deserve, but that, like, they understand as, like, combatants, you know, mm-hmm. Which is, like, sort of interesting. You know, the show doesn't dwell on it very long, but it was an interesting moment for them to kind of, like, because they're kind of, like, doing this exposition for the viewer, like, it is a moment where they have to, like, say these things out loud. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, I also do like how they finally clarify that this is meant to be like a second anniversary things of the attack, like, which makes slightly more sense, but still I feel like second anniversary is like a little bit of a strange time to commemorate. Yeah. Like the fifth one or the first or like the year one, like, it's just sort of, you know, it's, you know, judging from Palmer, like, it's definitely possible that he hasn't visited LA in the past 2 years, but still.
And it's also like, yeah, I mean, I think the thing is that, like, you know, this confirms that Palmer is not a California politician, because,
oh, sure.
I think, like, Drazen at some point does, or maybe even Ira at some point mentions, you know, we've got them here in this city the right. same day, right?
Yeah.
Which is like, look at all these assassins. You couldn't send an assassin to, like, you know, like Chicago and then to LA. Like, I don't understand. But also I still have this open question about, like, so this was 2 years ago. Like, was Jack in CTU? Was this, like, in his capacity as a CTU agent? Like, how exactly?
Yeah. Like, I just don't know, like, why they chose him specifically. Yeah. Like just like, it seemed like he just got these guys that he knew in Delta Force or something like that. Like,
yeah.
Obviously, like, this is like deep, deep state stuff, but still, like, it's rattled off in a way that, like, it still feels legible and clear, like, at least in the moment. But, like, putting it back together, it's sort of like a little bit hard to fully suss out.
And like you said, they retcon so much stuff, you know. I think it's one of those things where it's like, week to week, this is probably not something you think about or notice very much.
Yeah.
I'm sure the 24 wiki has like a detailed background, like bio of pre-CTU Jack that we'll have to dig into one of these days.
Yeah, definitely. I also really liked the moment, like in that same scene where Palmer like talks about how it has nothing to do with him running for president or specifically being black.
Yeah,
like, it's sort of like it's this. I mean, I really like that. Like, it sort of brings in this extra context. Like, it's I feel like his. Well, I mean, no, like you know, in the first couple episodes, like it was also mentioned, but like it's still like bringing home for him, like that is still like this very, you know, this thing that he's very consciously aware of. You know, which is you know certainly very proper. Yeah, and the when Jack and Palmer shake hands as they're leaving, and you get like this sort of this. Like heat-esque look between them where Jack like actually smiles.
Yeah, this is fantastic. It does have shades of that scene with Pacino and De Niro.
Yeah.
In Heat. Although I think you're right, like there is an oppositional energy there that if I recall correctly, later seasons of the show will play with a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so.
Cause yeah, I mean, it's just like Haysbert is really on in that episode. I think he's always good, even when they don't give him very much to do.
Yeah.
But I really felt like this is the first time in like this is one of the best times rather in the season where he's just like really just killing it.
Yeah, and like how he's resolved to stay there and flush them out.
Yeah, and he's just like, what are they gonna do? They're not gonna kick me out. Like I know the people that these people work for, you know. Yeah, it's an interesting moment, you know, with the show having to outline kind of the politics that lead to this. Yeah, it's really fascinating. And I love like that we have that little like confrontation and then it's just like they're working on a project together. Yeah. You know. It's great.
I could have just watched an hour or two of just them in that room, just like pouring through and like listing off these like random terrorist names.
Yeah, it's the first time the show really makes people doing like intelligence work at desks exciting.
Yeah, you know? Where as opposed to the scene in the second episode where Jack is like just like hammering away at this terminal like that won't let him in.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, what I love is that like Kiefer brings the same energy. Whether he's like running around and like shooting people or whether he's like reading files.
Yeah.
Like there's just an intensity there that he knows how to handle, you know. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, it's fun. Like this like when it is able to get into this sort of more procedural sort of thing, even in these quick flashes, it's just it's really fun. I like the very blunt way that it just reveals where Nash realizes that she's been with Alexis Drayson. It's like, just Pierce comes back in and he's just showing all these, like these slides. Like he has like this PowerPoint just hooked up to the TV. And then and I do like how it's Palmer that goes to her and talks to her and like if it gets her in touch with Jack.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another great Palmer moment where, like, you know, again, we really have not focused at all on, like, the campaign. But you see, like, oh, yeah, these people work for this guy for a reason. Like, you know, like, it's just really fascinating that, like, he immediately sees something's up. And like he's the one that goes and deals with it. He's not sending anybody else off. Yeah, it's just another and again another nice moment for Haysbert to like get some varying kind of levels going on.
It's also very well worth noting from findings at CTU that Palmer is actually her godfather.
What?
Apparently, her father was a prominent attorney, and he was one of Palmer's closest friends, or one of his oldest friends. So Nash is.
Never mind. I take it all back. That's incredibly stupid.
Yeah, we can regard findings at CTU as like partly extra canonical, but
no, it's fully canon.
Yeah,
these people have done the work.
Yeah, it's just really funny, just like this idea of like this sort of like pseudo nepotism, like it's sort of nepotism.
It's like, god nepotism.
Yeah, yeah. Where did they say that they met again? Nash and Alexis Drazen. Like it's just like, oh, it's in DC, right? Yeah, just like this.
Yeah. Bar. Which like I sort of get a little bit of like, okay, you know, you mm-hmm. meet a guy, like, it, you know, I don't think there's anything weird about that.
Yeah, I just like how aggressively horny she is for him. I mean, like, obviously, you know, problem with women that 24 has, like, that they can pretty much only conceive of women as like, you know, like either like, you know, like you can say like the mother and the whore sort of dynamic.
Yeah,
just like this, I feel like that's like very prominent here, especially like how she's just calling him every single time, like where Palmer's gonna be and like where she's gonna be.
Well, and that's I think for me what's so stupid about it is like, here's this person who knows that, you know, this her godfather is, you know, is potentially in danger, and that it might be in the interest of not just the campaign but like his safety, that, you know, people outside the circle don't know where he's at or what he's doing, right? Mm-hmm. Like it, that seems to me where it really like where it really fumbles, because it's like, yeah, I just, you know, I mean, I'm pretty cynical about people who work in politics, but it sort of seems like, you know, if there is this kind of like, you know, pseudo familial connection, especially, it'd be like, why doesn't she kind of like, I can't really tell you where we're at or what we're doing, like, you know, but I'll meet you such and such a place or whatever. And yeah, it's very odd.
Yeah, I agree. I do. But the balancing of Mason's total sarcasm with her sort of like sort of more, you know, like it probably is hard just being on the campaign trail all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just like it's this. Like I don't know where the show quite comes down on this issue, but still, either way, it's just this. The moment at least itself is played well.
Oh yeah.
I do wonder like if the Secret Service ever actually like ever clocked that she was just going out of the Aldo hotel room like once every 10 minutes to make a phone call if they found that suspicious at all.
Yeah, or maybe not even so much that as like, you know, they see, you know what, honestly, no, never mind. The Secret Service is not very good at their job, because not only has Palmer snuck out, the guy they're supposed to be protecting, now Keith sneaks out without really any problem. They're just not very good at it. That's what I think it is. I don't think they're very good at it.
Well, yeah, I agree. I do also like how Keith is just carrying that coffee cup across the hotel. And like how he puts on this random news report.
Yeah.
I wonder
if
that was an actual news report that they just happened to be playing that day, or if like they actually, you know, shot it.
I hope so.
Imagine if the invasion of Iraq had like come up like while they were showing a random news broadcast during one of these seasons of 24.
Yeah. I wonder, this is like an industry thing I don't know. Like if you have to have someone like watching the news or whatever, like not as like a delivery of like information,
right? Yeah,
in the show, like do you just turn on like an archive news product, like like, or do you shoot it as like part of the world?
Yeah,
I don't know, because obviously we're definitely gonna get like TV news segments in the show that are like for the show.
Oh yeah, we've gotten some already.
Yeah, but I sort of wonder for stuff like that whether or not you don't just let it be whatever's on.
During the car chase, before it gets to the full heights of its ridiculousness, I do like how it seems like the guy that's chasing after them is driving for in real time like 10 minutes before he realizes that they turned off the road. Like for a guy who managed to take down six guys with a spear gun, it's still like, not the brightest.
There's, you know, I feel like if you're a henchman, you know, you're not going to be a jack of all trades. You're going to have like your job, and he's like a hatchet man. He's not a driver.
Yeah,
you know, Yeah, but it does like beg the question, like, did he not see or hear any sign of the giant explosion that occurred, you know, maybe 30 seconds behind him?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose if you're up in the hills and whatever, maybe by then he's like wound around and is out of view and it's behind him. But yeah, it does take him a while to realize. Perhaps, like, ironically, I really don't remember anything that happens in the show until the final episode.
Yeah, yeah.
So I sort of like, I forget, does he end up finding Kim? Or is Kim just like wandering around, and then Terry like has forgotten everything, so she's just driving around with the one lady from NCIS for like
four episodes?
Yeah.
Man.
But yeah, I just cannot remember what else happens for the next like 4 to 5 hours of this television show.
I guess it probably is only about 4 or 5 hours left until we get into like the final chapter. Wow, that's weird. It's weird, like, when I think they mentioned how I think was it Alexis or Andre that were talking about how like Palmer would be dead by midnight. Like,
yeah,
like it was weird to think how much of the show has already elapsed. Like, it's not, you know, a ton of stuff has happened on the one hand, but also, like, it sort of feels like it's, you know, still not quite gotten underway. Like, maybe just because, like, I do wonder if we'll get this with other seasons where, like, it'll feel like there's these long stretches of, like, where, like, the one villain or whoever predominates, like where it feels like, you know, like, one sort of progression in a weird way.
Yeah, I do think that other seasons will have a different feel to their pace because of, like, what we've really had is, like, a completely conceived season that's half the length of what it needs to be.
Yeah.
Followed by episodes that are, like, trying to take that and, like, get the football all the way to the end, you know? like, take it to the end zone. And there's just, like, a lot of ground to cover to get there. And the thing, too, the problem is that the ground they're covering is just like setting in motion the same kinds of plots that already happened, right? Like, Terry and Kim have to be on the run again. they're getting kidnapped again, right? Like, it's a little bit, I think it feels redundant in a way that I'm not sure future seasons will.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, to your point, that we will get some of that, like, because to me, like, the classic 24 move is that the start of the season, the villain is never who you think it is, in that, like, this person is a villain, but they may be one or two or three levels removed from, you know, the real culprit by the end of the season, right? So you do get this kind of, like, wheels within wheels, like, opening up of the plot. But I think that just feels so bifurcated here because of the just, like, material realities of television. Mm-hmm. And I think had the season been thought out a little further, like, I think we'd be getting a lot of interesting Nina stuff right now.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. I still don't think they've decided that she's going to be a mole yet. Like,
yeah, it's like, it's all
everybody's
this time
kind of stopped talking about it.
Yeah. It's like all this time about like this interpersonal things.
Yeah.
Like you get like a tiny bit of Jack talking like about the possibility with Milo or something like that.
Yeah.
Which makes Milo's complete disappear, it's all the more baffling.
They're looking for like that missing file and trying to figure out, and then Bob's dead and Milo disappears. Not like, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but not like nothing happens to him.
No, I think
he just like stops, he just showing up.
He just gets sent home.
Maybe his contract hours are up and they don't want to pay him overtime.
I fully believe that Milo would be the type where, like, if he had, like, if his time was up, then he would just peace out. Like, he would not tell anyone.
Yeah.
we do get that moment where Jack apologizes to Milo for switching the car time. He does not apologize for spilling the pistachios, though.
I love that it was pistachios.
Yeah,
just like a weird, I just think there's a lot of weird things about this season.
Another weird thing, how Alexis and Andre look nothing alike despite being brothers.
Oh no, this to me is a classic bad guy dynamic, right? Because one of them got the hot genes and one of them did not. Although they're there's a fairly big age gap between me and my younger siblings.
Oh sure.
But they do seem noticeably different oh, yeah. ages, like 10 to 20 years apart. It's that's... very funny. And then I'm trying to remember, correct me if I'm wrong, but Victor was their brother?
No, or their father.
Or their father. Yeah. Okay, okay, okay.
Okay, okay. Yeah, you're right. Actually, there's like 15 years between Zelka Jovanovic and Misha Collins, who plays Alexis.
Okay.
There is a noticeably large gap.
Yeah. Like, not quite to the point where if I just saw them, I'd think they were father and son, but, like, it's a pretty big... yeah, okay, okay. Yeah, I just forgot for a second. I was like, wait, how are they all related to this? Right. Yeah, so it's interesting that you have kind of like, I'm trying to think of an analog to this. Not so much like a pinky in the brain situation, mm-hmm. but like a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, there's also, like, I do like the moment where Andre's like looking at this woman who looks like their sister or their dead sister. I think we got, I think that I wouldn't actually have liked to have more background for Ira, just because he's so obviously like so engaging, like, and sort of like the point is this sort of like blank mercenary thing,
yeah,
whereas for like I think that at least for some of the villains, like, we get more of this, you know, more time spent with them in a way that feels constructive to, like, not just like beat for beat plot beats.
Yeah And, you know, I mean, that's kind of what ends up getting retconned with Nina, right? Is that, like,
yeah,
we'll have spent a lot of time with this character
mm-hmm.
before we realize. And I feel like that dynamic is probably reproduced at later points, where a character that you maybe thought, not that you can necessarily trust them, but that maybe they weren't, like, a villain, so to speak,
yeah,
is revealed to be one.
Well, we just get so many... There's so many moles.
Oh, yeah. I mean... It's going to get wild. I'm interested to see what I do and don't remember as I begin to move on to other seasons.
Yeah.
But
it'll be both fun, but also hard for me to resist
in terms yeah, yeah. of
talking about this stuff.
No, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily, I wouldn't advise you to resist it.
We'll see. There's plenty to go around. Oh yeah. There was I just looked at the uncredited cast list.
Yeah.
Like, and there's like there's like this random, like, these people looking at Jack when he goes into Meet Palmer. Uh-huh. Like these random two people. Like, I think they're both women of color, I think, also. Yeah. Which is like another sort of, you know, the weird, I mean, you know, not necessarily weird, like, looking in terms of like a more industrial standpoint, but it's like just featuring these people as just like as backgrounds.
Yeah.
At these key junctures.
Yeah. I wonder too if those are just like people that worked on the show. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I read somewhere that they would do that. Maybe we've talked about it even, that they would kind of fill out CTU.
Apparently this one of them, Jacques Parson, who played Eileen, she appeared in three seasons and only one of them was credited, and it's her only credited acting role.
What? Does she do anything else? Like, it's
no, like, literally this is our only thing that on IMDb.
It's just wow.
It's just this one appearance.
Interesting.
She's apparently already been in five episodes, and I think maybe that's...
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, there are so many people who like work on like film or television that I don't know. Can you find like craft services people on IMDb?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so.
Probably not, right? I mean, like, yeah, in a film, they'd be credited somewhere probably, or at least like the company they worked for or whatever. But yeah. But yeah, so I do wonder if there are, you know, it takes a lot of people to run a set like this. And if it's just like, hey, we need some like bodies in the background, you know, so that it doesn't look like a totally empty office. Yeah. yeah, I wonder if that's... if some of these people had like roles working on the show in a capacity that's often like invisible.
It's, yeah, there's a surprise.
That's interesting to think about.
Yeah, there's six different...
I wonder if we could interview her, if we could find her. Yeah.
I mean, Wiki24 has a good treasure trove of interviews, but I don't think she's one of them. But yeah, there's just like... There is this guy who's guarding Terry and Kim in the clinic who's an unnamed staffer in the first five seasons.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Oh, and then he appears as a different person in season 7.
Like a named person?
As a named person.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He got upgraded to a name, stuck around long enough.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, just all these people who have played multiple different characters. So that's always fun. Well, I don't know. It's going to be hard to keep in mind just because the main cast characters like take up so much of the screen, but
yeah. And I mean, you know, outside of like a core group, we do get like all these different people kind of swapping in and out and rotating around Jack and disappearing and then returning. And I did just want to briefly point out a final quote that I hadn't talked about yet, which is at some point concerning Bob's disappearance, Jack says, "To be honest with you, I've got a very bad feeling about this."
I think that we also got one of the first of a few moments where someone says, I think related to Palmer, that like someone is in, or like, or I think that Palmer says to Jack that, or no, like Palmer said to Nash that with Jack, she would be in good hands.
Yeah.
I think I saw that referred to once before, but in a later season.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't think he was already with Allstate, was he?
I don't think at this point, no. I think that was a little bit later.
Yeah, 2003.
We'll have to keep an eye out for that. If you're the kind of person who, you know, skips to the end of a podcast or skips around to see whether or not you actually want to listen to the episode, then... and you've reached this point without listening to the episode yet, then you should know that we solved all the problems in Ukraine and Russia. we understand fully the blockchain. And actually, Ryan Swen is now in charge of NATO. So you can yell at him about NATO.
Yes. It was weird going to like editing the episode and having it come out like around the time when we put it up, like I think that Russia started invading immediately afterwards. So it was sort of a weird sort of.
Yeah. Well, and it's the stupid thing where it's like, the next day I was like, oh, I should tweet some more stuff about the podcast. And it's like, you know, it doesn't matter. Nothing I tweet is going to change the situation.
Oh, certainly.
You know, world politics. But it also, like, there's this weird thing where it's like, it feels disrespectful to like, like bump this podcast right now.
Yeah.
So I like waited a little bit, then I was like, I'm just gonna like retweet it or something. I don't remember what I did. But yeah, it's just that weird thing where it's like, you know, you feel compelled to say something, you know, meaningful or important. Yet at the same time, you know, it's like a total exercise in futility because it's like, yeah, it doesn't matter what I say or think about any of this because I'm making no decisions related to this.
I think we talked a little bit less about, you know, stuff that was more tangentially related to the current situation, just like because I feel like the Palmer Jack stuff has been more like covert ops, like not quite as overt, but we'll have time certainly, and presumably the state of the world will only get more fraught, so what will the atmosphere 24 is still in the air to some extent, just it's mutated.
Oh gosh, that's awful. What a horrible thought. we live in the world that 24 created.
Yeah,
that's how it is.
Oh, we should have gone with a 24 land or something like that. like in Nixon land or something.
Jack land. Bauer country.
Oh, that's a good one. But yes, please join us next time for our further incursion into the world that Jack Bauer and David Palmer created with their covert operations.
Bye, y'all.